entirely anew, apart from what the sheriff says. So basically, when if the person appeals, whatever the sheriff says out of court, he's just there to help the court understand our
That's right.
No, that's true, but the sheriff's going to have to rely on someone who's going to come in and say, it's my opinion that the applicant is likely or reasonably likely to be a danger to themselves or others.
I'm not sure. Okay. I'm not sure that the sheriff couldn't come in and personally testify and say, you know, I've known this guy for 6 years and this is a bad actor and let me tell you why. And it's opinion testimony at that point. Yeah. But it
suspend the rules of evidence.
I mean, that's not exhaustive. That's not exclusive.
That's true.
You still have a situation where the sheriff could say, you know, you still have the expert witness question, but I don't think that's the only question.
Chairman,
you have.
There's a couple of things we might agree on right away. I'd like to use, since this is civil cases, a rebuttable presumption. That is, a civil commitment within the first we've said a commitment within the last 10 years is grounds for refusal. I'd like, now the person can always have a separate proceeding to petition the court. We've got a section for that to say, let me out from under my restrictions here. And I'm not talking about that, but in this kind of proceeding, I could see a rebuttable presumption that a civil commitment within the last 10 years means that you are dangerous to yourself or others, or you have a presumed.
Then you'd be a prohibited person and you wouldn't have to go through all that stuff. Then you just show the commitment papers and the case is over.
Show the commitment papers, and that person, though, who wants to show that, no, I really wasn't dangerous, can still bring in a doctor's report or the doctor himself and say, well, I just committed him for the hell of it.
Can we link this, and I assume we can make it clear in the statute that whenever a person part of the same appeal process, rather than making the person the court will also look at the other section where they can violence, but you're okay now, we're going to give you the relief that you asked for, so we'll make it a little simple temper process to get both of those decisions made at the same time.
I would, Mr. Chairman, I would agree that as part of this same process, should the disqualification arise, that the person could at the same time ask that court to exempt the person from that disqualification. But I would not eliminate the other proceeding where the person recognizes right off the bat that he's disqualified and just applies for exemption. In other words, you could have a judge looking at the situation and say, yes, you are disqualified under the law, but I'll treat this now as a petition for exemption from disqualification, and I now override that disqualification. I could see that for purposes of judicial economy.
You agree with that, Mr. Clerk?
I missed it. I'm sorry.
Okay. I think we're talking about not isolating the appeal to basically say findings. They've got a one back.
I would propose.
So we go through both. The court would make both findings at the same time, and that way the person would get both of their shots and not have. I think would only be a problem if the person didn't understand the process and just filed their to complain about one, but didn't realize that they would have it. Although I don't know.
Counsel, how does that strike you?
I think it would work, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. What I would suggest is this. On the outline of things that I've put together, I would propose as a conceptual amendment that something be drafted up that include 1 through 5. The way I would handle Representative Mannix's suggestion is that after you talk about, probably before or after you define a court of competent jurisdiction, you would add a sentence or two that would say, relief shall be granted under the following circumstances, and then list out those situations where a court could override it, and then it would cover both situations.
And then include, I suppose, some sort of a catch-all provision about other situations where equity demands, or some such catch-all phrase like that. I mean, if I were a judge, I would shoot us if we didn't give enough, not only how do you get into court, but what do you do? What do the judge do once you're there? Give me some standards to talk to these people about.
All right, well, my suggestion is add it into number one and just say relief shall be granted when, and list out the things that we've talked about, and then say, or if equity demands.
Do you want a motion as a conceptual amendment, Mr. Chairman?
If we've got enough counsel, you think we can...
So long as there people are comfortable with 1 through 5 on the list. Okay.
One of the things I wanted to make sure we were clear about is that... Finding
de novo review. That would be the... Well, okay. No, I would say... I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman. May I...
The Court of Appeals? Yeah, what's your name?
There is no record, of course, in the municipal or district court to be reviewed at district court. So if there's district court review of municipal or justice court, there they'd make a new record. That would then be the record that goes on to the Court of Appeals if there's an appeal.
That would be reviewed de novo.
And that would mean that they review the whole record and make an equitable determination as to the decision. But once a record has been made at some level, you don't come in again and make a fresh record at the next level. That's my intention. Otherwise, you're wasting resources.
Of course, you don't.
It doesn't make much sense to me to have the Court of Appeals engage in de novo review. I understand that we start over again when we get into the district court. But theoretically, it seems to me it's just like a whole bunch of other cases that...
Standard civil appeal.
Yeah, we got a...
I would agree with that, Mr. Chairman.
If we're giving the... These basically aren't legal findings that they're making decisions off of. So I don't, just to throw this out as food for thought, when you're making a legal determination, you're saying that, okay, we're going to let that lower court determine what the facts are. But from those facts, we're going to apply the law. Whereas in this case, we're basically the court out of making a discretionary determination in the first place. There's nothing objective about it.
That's why we need to give the lower court some standards,
that's
some
what
law
relief,
to apply to the facts.
Relief shall be granted when, and
when.
We'll list those.
And then if the court has abused its discretion, well, there is also a legal interpretation. Based on certain findings of fact, one may reach certain conclusions. If there's a finding of fact which shows the person has been convicted of a felony, then the obvious conclusion is the person is not qualified, unless the judge makes a separate finding that for these reasons this person is now going to be exempted from that, and the standard for the appellate courts to review that is abuse of discretion by the judge in making certain determinations. I have no problem with saying that you're entitled to one fresh shot in front of a judge where the judge looks at it all, but then on appeal, it's a standard civil appeal review. As to the lower court's determination.
I would also suspect, and I'm just this is totally hypothetical, but I'm assuming that your legal appeals are going to be challenges to the statutes, challenges to the provisions that are going to be structured in a totally separate way and are going to take you out of this particular provision anyway.
Okay.
Why don't I just draft this up and we'll have it back for the committee by Monday and then they can look at it and play with it.
We have a Representative Clark.
Right now, the State Court Administrator's office is real busy, but I wonder if we could invite Mr. Linden to come over for 10 minutes next time we revisit this issue and just bounce some of these things off of him, because...
If he also had counsel's proposal there, it would help to focus on it.
What I had told Mr. Linden was that if the committee was willing to go with this, he would come up with something, and he could respond to it at that time.
We may be stepping into some traps here, or creating some traps that we don't realize.
Okay, let's just move this conceptually into the bill, and then we'll come back and visit it later, just for sake of making this feel like we're making some progress.
Well, we are.
Before Representative Clark leaves.
I won't leave till Brian gets back.
Well, Kevin's got to go, too. There's just a couple of technical stuff.
Okay.
So I just want to finish 7, if the committee will indulge counsel for a second, just so that we can clean this up and move. I want to finish 7 and 8.
7, minute ago it was seven, now it's seven and eight.
Well, actually, it's there's one to seven that I thought we had done. This is not written anyplace, but page 12, beginning on line 9 of the printed bill.
The original bill?
The original bill.
You're not working on the working
document. No, I'm not at the moment because I never got this in right. I never got this put into it. It has been suggested, and this language is going to be familiar because we've seen it other places, but that that section be rewritten to read as follows. The sheriff may deny a license if, delete in the sheriff's judgment, so may deny a license if the applicant, delete would be, and then it would read, the applicant has been or is reasonably likely to be a danger to self or others or the community at large as a result of the applicant's mental or psychological state as demonstrated by past pattern of behavior and participation in incidents involving violence or threats of violence. Yeah. It's basically the language that we used when we started playing with section 4.
Did you say past pattern of behavior or participation or past pattern of behavior and participation? It's important.
Or participation.
Good. All right. I agree with that.
But what the attempt was to take it out of the judgment and have a demonstrated pattern of behavior.
I concur.
Everybody out here okay with that?
I'll move that. Any objections?
Okay. Now, back.
Would that denial also be subject to review?
Yes.
Okay.
Now, back to the working document, and now we're back in Section 8. We were in 7. We're now in 8. Page 12, line 15.
We're on the original bill, page 12, line 15?
Yeah. The issue of mail, just first class, got added in.
Okay. We've already done that one, right?
No, I don't know if we did it
or not. Can I add the first class mail again?
Yeah, we're just doing it. I don't know if it's in or not, so if it hasn't been done, it should be done.
Any objections? Done.
Now, on page 12 of the working document, there was some new language recommended by the working group. Is this, John, is what's in the working document the same as this, and is this what you want instead?
That I wasn't aware that the other language in the working document.
Is this what?
It doesn't matter.
Okay. All right. Let's stick. They're two different things. Let's just skip this for now, and we'll deal with this at another time because that is more complex than I want to deal with it today. So that's it for today.
Okay, now we haven't moved the court process that we had outlined.
Oh, okay.
Do we conceptually want to move the court process as previously outlined by the committee?
Yes.
Objections? So ordered. Good.
We'll be back Monday at 5.
Back Monday at 5, committee adjourned.
Yes.
5 a.m. We'll be here.